David A. Price presents...
Hello, folks. Welcome to Marvel Noise, episode 395. I'm your host, Steve Montana Raker, here in the comic book bunker along with the Ox, WWX Kevin, and Fancy Dan Andrew, the L.A. Rabbit.
I'll take it. I like Fancy Dan, although Ox might be a more accurate description of my mental acumen.
Marvel Noise.
I think Dan would be someone else, but, you know.
Marvel Noise is the semi-monthly podcast proudly sponsored by nobody. Our scope is all things Marvel, but let's face it, we've got a particular fondness for and fascination with the Bronze Age and what came after. You can find, listen to, stream, and download episodes past and present over on marvelnoise.com and get new episode announcements and give us feedback and the like over on our Twitter and Facebook pages. Find other fine podcasts from our host with the most, Derek Howard, and his Deliberate Noise Network, which include Indie Comic Book Noise, our sister show, where we talk, you guessed it, indie comics. And Item, the Baltimore Comic Con. It's a terrific comic-centered show that's basically two big artist alleys with a retailer zone off to the side the way most cons would have an artist alley. It's true. The Baltimore Comic Con will be held, rain or shine, at the Baltimore Convention Center in the Inner Harbor Tourist Trap Zone of Baltimore on October 21st, 22nd, and 23rd, 2022. It's a lot of 20s. Check out the really awesome guest list and get tickets and other info over at BaltimoreComicCon.com. I should be there with my pal Jim Whiting, who will be tabling in Artist Alley. It's always a fun time, so hope to see you in Baltimore. And actually, speaking of Jim, he recently told me that he doesn't keep up with a lot of the current stuff, or pre-order it at least, so doesn't, you know, really know what to look for or what was good. So he kind of likes it when we cover current comics. So you guys up for like a recent reads roundtable with maybe a little... Bronze Age side quest?
Oh, no one told me we were supposed to read current comics.
I did.
I just find it funny. We say recent reads, and so often that amounts to like recent comics, but recent reads can be anything you recently read.
It can be. It can be a double entendre, or it cannot be, right? It's what we read recently, but it could also be recent reads. Anyway, what do you got, Kevin?
Well, I had to continue our journey here with Mr. Sandman.
Are we on a Mr. Sandman journey?
I don't know
how long... Bring Kevin a dream.
I don't know how long this will be a continuing segment. I mean, for all I know, it'll end right here, but... I remember we did that Sandman one. I don't know what episode that is. I mean, maybe I should have looked that up.
Episode 37 in 2007. No, just kidding.
Exactly. But he showed up again not long after in Marvel Team Up 138, which is... Or Foes, which also has Enforcers on the cover. And the Ox, I don't know if it's like that giant highlighted head, but it looks like he has a really big head on this cover.
Well, he's got a big everything. Like, he's a big guy.
Well,
he's Ox.
That's the thing. Like, you see the Enforcers in this issue... And you can really tell, like, they have the different body shapes, the different sizes. Because Fancy Dan, I'm like, was he always that short?
Yeah. He's short. That's his thing, but he knows really the martial arts.
Everyone's really tall.
Yeah, you need to read them old Spider-Man comics.
I mean, I definitely need to look at that again, because I was like, wait a second, because on the cover, I mean, obviously he's in the background, so it doesn't look like that as much.
And Tex uses a lariat, a rope, to rope people up.
And then they have that little gag at the beginning of this story where Spider-Man uses the vacuum to suck up the Sandman. Always a classic move. Always great to see.
Never gets old.
But anyways, the Sandman's dealing with his, I guess, post-crime life after he had that drink with the thing in the bar.
Yeah.
And then he's all sort of like, maybe I'll get a job. I don't know. You think you would line all that stuff up, though? Like, that you would need to do to have a job? Because I'm not sure. Like, so much time he spent being a criminal. I don't know if he knows how society really works. And I don't know if he even has a wardrobe, because he just wears that sand striped shirt everywhere he goes still.
Well, I mean, Kevin, it's hard for him to take a shower.
Yeah, I would say so. But as I pointed out to Andrew, it's a crazy 80s, I guess, because Spider-Man's having that trouble web-swinging. So then they have this panel that's sideways. It's not... You still might want to turn your comic around, but it's only the middle of the panel, in the middle of the page. So maybe an appropriate use of something like that. I mean, it's not as crazy as a car flipping over and you're turning your comic around or something, but definitely different. Things get wild and crazy.
As well they should.
Oh, so who's Spidey teaming up with in this one?
Well, that's the thing. Is he going to team up with the Sandman, really? I mean, he makes some comments here, the Sandman, about being a hero or something like that. And then in my back of my mind, I'm like, well, for 20 years. someone will brainwash you eventually and want you to be the Sandman again. Yeah. I mean, I always dig that gig. Probably because one of those early comics I read was Amazing Spider-Man cover with him with the Avengers, and I'm just like, what is going on there? Anyhow, here it looks like the Enforcers has the Kingpin is weaseling in on their business here. Hey, you can do this stuff for me, and it's like, oh yeah, why not, right? And then the Sandman's like, oh, I need somewhere to live. He gets a little place. Seems like a cool place, right? He gets a job. I mean, apparently, he doesn't know how all that stuff works, but, you know, it's going to work out for a little bit.
Yeah, he's on the road to redemption.
Apparently. He might help some people out along the way, right? It looks rather painful. Like, the Enforcers are, like, shaking people down for money, and then, like, they see Spider-Man. Spider-Man's having those Spider-Sense problems, as sometimes happens. Sometimes it's an inner ear infection, right?
Yep.
Then he's just swinging by, and if you're just swinging by and, like, you get caught in a lasso and brought down onto the street, I mean, it looked painful, but he still is able to hit the street with one hand. So, I mean, ouch. That's good.
That's a good way to break your
wrist,
though.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm thinking.
Don't put your hand out. But you gotta roll with it.
I was imagining that the web spinning devices provide wrist support, Steve.
There you go.
There's my no prize submission.
Works for me. It's the proportionate strength of a wrist there too. So,
of a spider's wrist.
But you know, his battle doesn't go so well with the Enforcers. So good, old Sandy is there to possibly help him out. I mean, Sandman's a little conflicted about the whole thing. And then there's, like, this weirdo Pac-Man ad in here, too, where I was just staring at it. I'm like, what's that black on Pac-Man's face? I'm like, is he wearing a beard? And then I'm like, no. Maybe it's a mask. And I'm like, oh, that's his mouth. He's eating one of those dots. And that's his, I don't know, something about the perspective. But apparently, telling time was never so much fun with Pac-Man watches.
You can never get enough Pac-Man.
Apparently. Oh, and then it says something about this floating technology. The floating disc technology. I'm not quite sure what they're talking about. Maybe Pac-Man's floating in the watch?
They borrowed it from the wizard.
Maybe.
It's like one of those wands with the liquid and the glitter inside, you know? Pac-Man's just like floating around and some ghosts and some pieces in your watch. Tilt your wrist.
I mean, you watch upside down, Steve, and all his clothes come off.
I didn't have a watch like
it's
that,
a
Andrew.
It's snow globe, but it's a watch.
I don't think they make those novelty pens anymore that have the hula girls whose clothes go off when you turn them up.
Maybe in Japan. I mean, they have those mouse pads and those cushions and everything. That's kind of questionable. So I'm thinking the pen isn't far off.
Dude, you got to turn the page because I got to know, does Sandman help or not? You're leaving me hanging.
Well, I mean, he fights the enforcers, but...
That's help.
Not so much for, like, necessarily helping Spidey at first.
Well, he doesn't have to like
Spidey.
I mean,
he did team up with enforcers before. But he doesn't really want to see Spidey necessarily murdered, but, you know, they have a good time duking it out. And then Spidey can get his groove back.
Yay.
Still, Spidey's kind of like, well, I can't let the Sandman go. And then Sandman's like, well, you know, they try to work something out, but, I mean, if he lets the Sandman go and then he murders someone's uncle, I mean, Spidey's going to feel bad. But the arranger here for the Kingpin has, I don't know, I guess he just carries around some grenades or bombs with him just in case, you know, some job goes sideways. Like, what's he going to do? He has no powers. So Sandman protects old Spidey here, and then Spidey's just like, I don't really don't want to see if he's alive or dead. So, and we only have one page left, so, I mean, end of story. Sandman reforms himself. And he says, I gotta get another job, even though the last one didn't work out, because I didn't provide them any form of identification. You might want to look into that before you get another job, Sandy. I can call you Sandy, right?
He should apply for a job as beachfront property.
Why doesn't he just get a job like on a movie set?
Those old villains, the enforcers, and even Sandman himself made me think of the book I just read, or at least the reason why I enjoyed it, was the latest issue of the current Ghost Rider series, Ghost Rider number 4. Written by Benjamin...
Is that the race issue?
No, that one hasn't come out yet, I don't think. I think that's the next one.
Oh, okay. There was one that looks like that. It's like, well, maybe the cover's deceptive, right? But we did the death race.
Right, right.
And then I saw the one with a bunch of motorcycles, and I'm like, I hope they're racing for something.
Yeah, that was in the next issue blurb at the end of this issue. This is written by Benjamin Percy with art by Corey Smith and Oren Jr. And, I mean, this title, for a title that, like, boasts both that it's a celebration of 50 years of the Ghost Rider and has a legacy numbering that's, like, getting close to 250, they sure don't publish it very much. Like, this is issue 4, and it's hitting the stands 2 months from its solicitation month. So it's, like, been dragging on with months missing. But
I feel that's pretty common for every title that isn't, like a main title.
Yeah,
but... It's like if they need to slash some titles because they don't have any paper or something, like, that's skipping a month.
Yeah, not much for the 50-year celebration aspect. You know what I mean? It's like they're trying to build buzz to get to 250, and it's not going to work if you... have a bi-monthly book. I was intrigued.
Maybe if Sandman showed up.
Yeah, there you go. Well, stick with me, true believer. Stick with me here, because this issue has a good villain of the month. I like the fact that there was this immortal Hulkish horror angle of this Ghost Rider book that they're going for. I don't really care for the sewn and pierced mystic detective girl that's like on Johnny Blaze's trail or anything, but whatever. But this fourth issue,
the X-Files girl?
Yeah. This fourth issue is really fun though, because the second half of the issue is basically a confrontation with the Ringmaster and his circus of crime. But they're amped up to suit this horror angle, and it's like gruesome and grotesque, and I really enjoyed it. Really enjoyed it. It was cool. Like, I had to check, are they like zombified, or are they just really evil and horror-esque? And they do this thing where all the people the Ringmaster possesses turn into this giant, like, homunculus humanoid being of all the bodies woven together following his commands and stuff. And it's like, ooh, I've never seen him do that before. That's gross. It's pretty cool.
Wait, Snake wasn't there, was he?
Who? Snake Plissken from Escape from New York? No.
Yes.
What about Princess Python?
She was there, and I think it was her, at least. And, you know, like the strong man guy, and the fire-breathing guy, and the clown. But
the Gamboli brothers, the human camel.
Oh, yeah, they were there, too. Right. The Brothers Grimm. The Brothers Grimm were there. Yeah, yeah. It was cool, though.
Oh, did I forget that? I think I forgot to mention the creators for this Marvel team-up issue. If we can just step back for an issue.
Sure.
That was Tom DeFalco and Greg LaRocque and Mike Esposito on the finished art there.
Yeah,
Esposito. I guess a lot of times that you had the same creators that were on the ongoing Spidey. They'd be like, hey, let's drop in for... Marvel team up, or writers that would soon be writing Spidey.
Well, Marvel team up, Esposito inked a lot of Marvel team ups. That was just kind of the book they gave him, especially when he was further along in his career. And LaRocque had a good run of Marvel team ups shortly after issue 100, where he drew the book till the end. So he was a regular. And when that book ended, so that, I want to say it's Web of Spider-Man is what started. He was the penciler on that book, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah, I think someone mentioned that recently somewhere about the Web of Spider-Man, and I never made the connection that one of these books had ended and they just started another one.
Yep. Andrew, what have you been reading or watching?
All right, do you guys want... I saved my Marvel Unlimited Premiere box to do an unboxing. If
oh,
you guys
no
want.
Way.
Oh, yes.
I can save it and do it off camera, or I can do it right now.
Get out of here. You rip that thing open.
Okay, this box is 60 Amazing Years. It has a cool picture on. I think I've sent these boxes to people. They make cool kind of repacking boxes, but here we go.
We did that 60 Amazing Years webcast thing, right? So this is like the thing from that.
To our Marvel Unlimited Plus members. Whoa, a whole long letter sent to me and some variant covers.
Is it written by Steve Ditko? The letter?
Number one, variant edition. Welcome to the X-Men Polaris. Hope you survive the experience. Well, this is quite nice. Oh, thank you to our amazing members. Let's see if we can find Andy's name on it. Am I on it? Checking.
On the comic?
On the back page. They print a bunch of names.
Oh.
In the comic book?
Looks like I did not on the back cover.
Wow.
Yeah, to our amazing members, thank you. A special thank you to these select members. Not this select member, but other ones.
Well, what did they have to do to get on the back cover?
Who drew the Polaris cover?
But yeah, this is X-Men number one with a cool Polaris cover on it. I also have a Sinister War number one variant. You can tell these variants, they have the unlimited U on the front cover.
Uh-huh.
So if you're ever curious about it, you can, and you see those variant covers, those are the ones that they give us. So there's probably, I don't know, 20,000 unlimited members or whatever. There has to be a fair amount of them because you guys know we get extra stuff in here. Let me open up the secret compartment. See what we get. Woo! We got a pin of Ghost Spider.
Ah.
Which I'll be sending to someone, and then a pin. And a X patch. You know, actually, it's not the X patch. It's a little sore patch. And a mystery figure. A Marvel Legends style Kitty Pryde, including a tiny Lockheed and a sword.
Wow.
So she's in the blue and yellow with a red handkerchief, and she has her hair in a ponytail. Okay. If this is like the other ones. So, excellent. I'm sure available on eBay already. I like getting a little tiny Lockheed. That's kind of cool.
Sure.
The face sculpt is nice.
Can put them on your dashboard. Not really
smiling or anything, but yeah, cool. I always like these little things. They give you a little figure. I mean, basically, I'm paying whatever the difference is for two comic books and a figure, but they used to have events and stuff at shows. Maybe they still do, and you can go to certain panels or whatever, but it's fun. Yeah, Kitty Pryde. I like this figure. Better than some of the other ones.
Kitty doesn't smile enough anymore.
Yeah. I mean, this one, she's pretty serious.
They have to give that back to her. They have to give her smile back.
She didn't smile when she was messing up Sebastian Shaw.
Right? Like a crocodile smile.
Boy, they seal this thing like it's the Hope Diamond in here. Holy crap.
We don't use windows, plastic windows on our boxes good anymore, gosh. But good luck getting the plastic bag open.
They seal these things like it's the end times. I mean, all right. Woohoo, here she is. Lockheed. Ooh, he's only like maybe 3/4 inch. Ooh, he does stand up. Oh, does he fit on her shoulder? Does the tail work around?
Or her.
Oh, yeah, he can go on her.
Yeah.
Nice, nice. Although I got to say, I did buy some Marvel Legends when Hasbro ran that sale. And I got like the classic Scarlet Witch and the Dormammu. And the problem with the lady ones with the big hair is it just like sticks their head.
Yeah.
In that like yes. one.
You can't turn.
You get 1 degree of movement or whatever.
Yep.
So you're kind of stuck. I would like to not have that change. The other thing that's weird.
Mohawk Storm.
Nice little X belt.
You need Mohawk Storm. She can turn her head all the way around.
For both Dormammu and Scarlet Witch, they have all those little curly Q magic effects that I don't know what to do with. Like, it just looks like little bits of plastic for me to waste. Do they
put it on their wrist, on their hand?
Yeah, it doesn't look. I mean, I guess if you're doing photo shoots or something, I don't.
I've seen you do photo shoots.
I mainly just play with my little plastic pals. I like the sword, though. Looks like it belongs to Nightcrawler. Although, no scabbard. I think she'll just hold it. Yeah, cool. Cool. I love the little Lockheed. It's like a total free bonus. Like I said, I'm sure there is a very similar existing Marvel Legend. I don't really keep up with the waves because that would be a full-time job. I feel like they crank out figures.
They sure do.
At an astonishing rate. As well, there's the demand, but you know, it's dizzying. I just bought a bunch of them because they were on sale, the Hobgoblin, the old school Hobgoblin. You know, and I'm like, well, 40% off kind of balances out shipping and all that. So I'll buy a couple just because I haven't been to a show in a while. So it'll give me that shopping thing. But yeah, cool. Yeah, I don't, minor paint swaps are not something that interests, like, oh, we change this or articulation or something isn't anything that's ever going to get me. But more power to the collectors that want to get, you know, if you're like a character or team base, maybe you want every version of whatever. And
sometimes I mean it's been like 20 years since they did like Toad, so I probably would have bought a Toad at a regular price.
I mean, I can't really fault. I feel like they've produced a lot. I mean, yeah, there's always someone's favorite never been made, but I feel like they've put out quite a wide variety of figures. Yeah, the Dormammu was kind of fun, although he should be giant, right? Like, it's weird that he's regular size.
Like, the rest of the Serpent Society would be nice.
The rest of the New Warriors or Thunderbolts would be nice.
Thunderbolts. They're never doing the Fight Bolt characters, Kevin. I hate to break it to you, but I know you won't consider it complete till you have them, but they're probably not going to get around to those characters anytime soon.
Well, they got around to the Red Bolts.
Yeah, right.
I know you need a Daniel Axiom to finish off the team, but...
You know it.
All right, Kevin, you're up. Batting out matches.
Okay. should we get this multimedia show going?
Sure.
Since,
is there going to be a PowerPoint?
Dr. Strange Mom was available on Disney Plus.
I really enjoyed that one.
I'm going to say I enjoyed it, yeah. I it's not going to break into my top 10 anytime soon, but it was definitely an enjoyable experience.
I thought it was very comic booky, and assumed you already knew who all the characters were, so they didn't take a lot of explaining time, and it was just like jumped right into it. There was just a little bit of a boring part at the beginning, and then it was like full throttle, and they did the thing that we're so used to, but moviegoers aren't, where they drew in characters from like the What If animated series and from other movies and other things, and it's like you're just totally immersed in, you know, the Marvel world, basically, and they made excuses for all of the other types of Marvel cartoons and comics and versions of characters, and that thing just where they're going through the multiversal like dimensions, and then they're like, you know, paint, and then they're bumblebees, and then they're, you know, cubic, and then that was just so cool. A lot of fun. It was just a fun movie.
Lots of action, like you say, Steve, which is not, I mean, not that I don't mind a cerebral mental thing, but it's fun to have a comic book movie where I don't know, every 10 minutes, like, there's some kind of crazy comic book stuff going off.
It's just, I'm waiting for a character to do something. A certain character, a certain America character, and it's
I hear
like
you. I was disappointed by Rintraw as well, Kevin. I mean, they did nothing.
They're being more like it's America Year One, and being too much of a victim, so I'm like, I'm waiting for that moment. I mean, if someone watches, like, whatever future thing they're going to show up in, they'll be like, oh, they're, like, a different character now. And I'm like, yeah, because they got over
it.
What, like their initial... I don't know, it kind of felt like the comics when I wasn't into the character, and then later on, when the character is, like, fully formed or someone has a different take, then I get into the character. It's like this movie where I'm like, oh, they should be punching stuff, and it's like they're not punching stuff, and I'm like, I'm waiting for them to punch something. Like, that's your signature move, do your thing.
Well, she did it,
and I guess they want to build to that thing.
You see, it's funny you should say that, because I don't really care for the America character in the comics. She felt to me in, like, I don't know if I missed her initial introduction or what it was, but she was a lot like the Ms. Marvel character to me, where it was like I didn't really understand her power set at the beginning, and I just kind of nothing really took hold with me that made me like the character very much. But in this movie, I thought she was really likable, and her role in the cinematic universe made a little more sense to me than it did in the, and maybe it's that I just needed to be, as you know, I'm as dumb as a movie going audience and I needed it to be explained to me, you know, like as like the lowest common denominator or whatever. But I really liked her in that movie, and I don't really care for her character that much in the comics.
I was waiting for her to be like the cool character. I know, like, hey, make some sassy remark and punch some stuff and all that, but I guess that's coming.
I like her in that Secret Wars.
She got underdeveloped. Well, what about Rintra? That guy had like two lines.
Yeah.
He had no character development.
At least he was there.
I don't know who that is.
It was just an Easter egg.
I mean, they made a Build-A-Figure, and I'm like, who is this green guy that's a Build-A-Figure? I'm like, we've reached the point of Build-A-Figures where I don't even know the characters are anymore.
One of Doctor Strange's key disciples. They had, had a nice long run.
Yep. The Doctor Strange
Sorcerer Supreme. Yeah, back when he would take... when he would take on and train people as part of his, sort of like, you know, the Ancient One did for him. They sort of had him take on pupils and everything. And Rintra was a prominent one that featured in a lot of great stories.
And I like how the internet worked overtime on with that Spidey movie and this one, saying, hey, there's 1,000 characters in each of these movies. And the Spidey one did not have 1,000 characters. But at least Doctor Strange was much closer to having 1,000 characters in it. So I enjoyed that part. I'm like, ooh, that's nice. And also those things that kind of look like, what was up with that? I mean, there's definitely some cool locales in the Marvel movie universe where I'm like, I wonder if someone went there on vacation before or something. It's just like, hey, what's that? It's one of those funny details. And I'm like, does that mean that other dude was hanging around? Like, I want to know the history of some of these things that they describe the surface of.
I've been to a couple of very cool panels about people that scout film locations. And it's pretty interesting, like, all the different places they go and the resources they have. And I mean, it's a little easier with the internet now, but it is fascinating, those people. And they really do travel all over the world, and they have all kinds of different things, so if production teams go to them, they can really rattle off all kinds of crazy places and facilities and types of buildings and spots. Just really interesting couple of panels. If you ever see those at shows, it might not sound that interesting, but it's kind of a fascinating job and part of something that's pretty key in movie. You know, it's not all green screens all the time.
My favorite thing in that Doctor Strange movie was not necessarily spoiler, I would think, in the terms of how we think of spoilers, but the battle with like musical notes and orchestral, the orchestral piece, the composition, I thought was really clever and really seemed magical and seemed like something that works more in a movie format than it would even, like, if they tried something like that in the comic books. I don't think that it would necessarily work so well, but taking musical notes off of a ledger and chucking them at each other and then having them make, you know, like the musical sound and chord when it hit, I thought was really, really clever and really done well. And it like kept going. It was like a real battle.
Yeah.
Battle of the bands.
I mean, you better have some cool stuff here if you're having a Doctor Strange movie.
Yep.
I'm always thinking of Ditko and those worlds and all that.
I read, if we can park the car here for a minute, because I want to catch a little bit up on the two main Star Wars series, the Star Wars itself and Darth Vader.
The two main?
Yeah.
I have Darth Vader and Star Wars?
The two
main. I have a lot of those books. I've been buying the Crimson Rain ones too, Steve. I don't know if you have those.
Yeah.
And the Bounty Hunters and Afra.
I've been reading most of them. They're, like you said, they're under this current Crimson Dawn status quo. I think it's more that than like a simple or even complex crossover event, because like with the other Marvel, like modern Marvel events, you can sort of just keep reading the titles you were reading before and it's all good. Some of them only sort of loosely have to tie into the Crimson Dawn stuff, and it seems like it's going on for kind of a while, the Crimson Dawn stuff. So, like, the titles are going through storylines, like, multiple storylines, with it all still under this Crimson Dawn banner. It's kind of neat, though. The Crimson Dawn title itself was 5 issues, written by Charles Soule with art by Stephen Cummings and Victor Olazaba. And in the last one, the Emperor pretty much informs Vader that he knows about the Crimson Dawn and how, like, he sort of acknowledges how widely their infiltration is into the galaxy, and knows who their leader is, this woman, Quira. And her, I mean, she knows her time is up, so she enacts her failsafe plan as the issue ends and the series ends, to cause chaos across the Empire. And that's going to be like the next Star Wars status quo, hidden Empire, where apparently the Crimson Dawn will strike from within. All of the sleeper agents all throughout the galaxy are going to cause chaos or whatever. We'll see. But Kevin, you don't think that there's sort of two main Star Wars titles? It seemed like there's been a Star Wars book and a Darth Vader book kind of all along since the beginning, and the other titles kind of come and go, no?
Well, that's why I said Star Wars and Darth Vader, and I thought you were going to come in here and tell me, oh no, Crimson Rain or whatever.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm fair like, enough. No, we're in agreement.
Darth Vader, I read the last.
I'm embarrassed. I didn't realize Crimson Rain had ended. I was saving all the issues and do a big read through of the Star Wars stuff. I got a little stack of maybe 10 issues or something.
It's turning out to be a trilogy, Andrew, where the Bounty Hunter War thing was the first, and this is the second, and this Hidden Empire thing is going to be the third in this sweeping suite.
I enjoyed the Bounty Hunter. That's why I'm buying all these Crimson Rain tie-in books, because I'm like, that was fun. I just wanted to read them kind of in a batch rather than, I mean, I started it to make sure I'd like it, and then I just was saving it up. So I'm glad to know I can cut into them.
I read the last 5 issues of Darth Vader 20 to 24, which are written by Greg Pak with art by Rafael Ionco and Marco Castillo. And by and large, I like how in all of these Darth Vader series that Marvel has done, they kind of use it to detail how Vader's kind of going behind the Emperor's back and, like, learning about lies that the Emperor's told and doing things sort of in secret, that I think gives them a fun angle and sort of makes Vader acceptable as the protagonist, because you know that he's getting closer and closer to the lies that we know were perpetrated and the wrongs that were perpetrated on him and stuff. And all the series too have been bolstered by great supporting characters around him. In the first series, it was Dr. Aphra and those torture bot versions of 3PO and R2, and Aphra obviously went on to be a hit to have her own series and everything. And now in this arc, during this era of the series, there's this masked assassin, Ochi of Bestoon, and not Padme. Her name's Sebe, who's one of Padme's lookalike handmaidens, who turns out to be a badass. And she survived, and she's also with this Crimson Dawn bunch. And at first she's hunting Vader, but later basically gets captured by him. But she has knowledge about Padme and Padme's death and stuff that sheds light on both her and the Emperor's lies to Vader. And she also figures out that Vader is Anakin, and then uses that knowledge to kind of gain his sympathies. It's pretty cool. She even has like an Olivia Newton-John Grease moment at the end of 23, where she dons like Empire garb and makes a big entrance, and Vader's like, wow, who's this babe? But their whole thing is they're set to take down this governess who's abusing people from Naboo, and this not Padme similarly thinks that they're still good in Vader, and is giving him the opportunity to prove it, but it also meets Vader's own end, and it's like, why is he keeping her around and alive? It's pretty cool. And that Ochi assassin dude is trying to play all sides, so he's constantly going behind everybody, but then switching allegiances in the heat of the moment and stuff, and Vader pretty much knows this, but still keeps him in the fold, and it makes for, at times, comic relief, and at times, he really saves the day because he's actually a really efficient and proficient, like, commando type. So you think that he's never going to help because his allegiances are elsewhere, and then all of a sudden, no, here he is, he's helping out after all. Maybe he is with Vader, maybe he's not. We'll find out eventually how it all comes to pass, but I think the Vader book has really been consistently the best book of these Marvel Star Wars books. All right, and lastly, for my Star Wars stake in the ground here, is Star Wars itself, 21-24, written by Charles Soule with art by Ramon Rosanos. And these issues detail Poe Dameron's mother, Shara Bay, infiltrating this Imperial destroyer ship, the Tarkin's Will. And she's like living aboard the ship as a stowaway in hiding, doing little things and setting charges and learning information and sabotaging stuff. And eventually she gets captured by the evil but really well-trained and effective Commander Zara, who runs the ship. And this Zara lady, she's like always a step or two ahead. She's a real good military tactician. She can anticipate how her opponents will react to her actions and act accordingly. And she's really ruthless too, like brutal. But the rebels manage a rescue attempt, and in so lure this Tarkin's Will ship away from its fleet. But Zara adapts, and it turns out that Leia's plan is too good, and it ends up with a crashed Star Destroyer and a chase through a cave and a final showdown with Zara and Leia. It's really good stuff, both character-wise and plot action-wise, both. So I'm going to keep on with both the Vader and the main Star Wars titles because they've both been really consistently good. And like I said, they're the kind of the backbone of whatever Star Wars stuff is going on. Even during the events, whether they've been good or whether I felt lukewarm during them, if I just stick with the titles that I'm reading, I've been a happy Marvel Star Wars comic book reader.
I mean, that's good that works out.
Yeah.
Yeah, the bounty hunter thing pulled me back in, and I've been, but like I said, I just kind of pile them.
Yep.
You know, I'm old and can't remember what happens from month to month.
No, I get it.
And you know me, I just randomly hop in and out sometimes. I mean, I picked up a couple of those Vaders.
Cool. It's a good book.
Should I continue this multimedia extravaganza?
Yes, you should.
All right. I know by the time you... Well, who knows? Maybe you'll get this out really fast. But I'm pretty sure... I don't know how many episodes. Now that I say that, I don't know how many episodes
Kevin, don't date Marvel, this. Don't...
Netflix actually is.
Don't rip away the curtain. Like, it's all, I know, that's what recorded I thought. Right
maybe
before.
Steve wants to edit that out.
As we enter the Christmas season here on Marvel Noise, I just want to wish you guys the best for 2023.
The sixth year of the pandemic has just hit us.
And phew, aren't we glad we're through that?
Anyhow, they're up to 5 episodes. But I haven't actually looked it up. So, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if it ended after 6 episodes, let me just say. So, yeah, I watched that. And then, of course, I had to read some of the comics. So I was pretty impressed by the Ms. Marvel TV series. Like, I remember reading that first issue when it first came out. and not being super jazzed by it. I guess there was things about it, right? I was just like, I'm like, oh, this is all right, but not something I wanted to follow. And much like the America character, it was like years later seeing Miss Marvel team up with, like, I don't know, Spider-Gwen or whoever, and I'm like, the team ups were always great. And it seemed like that's where I wanted to read about the character, just goofing around with Miles or whoever. So they have that that sense of fun and everything in the TV series, and there's some pretty interesting visual things where, like, the comic is, like, integrated into some of the scenes.
Really? Well, that's kind of cool.
Like the graffiti on the wall takes on a life of its own. I'm like, yes, that's what you need to do, like, establish your identity for the show.
When I first read the Ms. Marvel book, I
There's
like,
some
you know how I said before that
definitely if you
you know how I said before that the Ms. Marvel didn't really stick with me as a character. It was weird because when I first started reading her book, I was more intrigued with her, not as what she was doing superhero wise. Like, the stuff with her and her family was interesting, but it's like, that's not what I want to read in a superhero comic book, you know? And then, like, like I said, I didn't understand her power set and stuff. But my son is watching this Ms. Marvel series, and I haven't, but he said her powers, one of the things I said to him was I didn't really understand her power set at first with the big giant fists and stuff. And he said in the show they're making her kind of like, he said Green Lantern, that everything's like light constructs. Is that kind of accurate or no?
Then I don't think they wanted to acknowledge the whole Inhumans origin, and but you could just substitute that with, I don't know, the Kree or some other alien race, like. But yeah, there definitely is a fundamental change, and I don't think it'll affect the show, but in a comic book sense, there is that idea of, like, when you had the Civil War, it's like Tony can't relate to Cap because Tony can just take, like, his superpower is his armor. Like, he can just take his armor off. So effectively, he can just take his powers off. And then, hey, I'm not superpowered anymore. So that's different than someone that has their powers in them all the time, and that's their life. So yeah, there is some, like, thing where, she always has, like, that bracelet type of bangle thing in the comics. I mean, that's really like her sort of, like, Green Lantern ring.
Gotcha.
So, I mean, everything else is there, so I don't think it's really bothersome. But since I know, like, I think it's better if you don't know that. And you're just like, oh, she has giant fists or whatever, and it's just displayed in a different way. But there's more to it than that, and really stuff that I didn't think they were gonna go with. So I mean, it's still alien in a way, but not in the way that it is in the comics. Yeah, so I mean, there's still all the other good stuff and everything, and then later on, they just, like in the comics, she goes to Pakistan to, like, rediscover herself or whatever, you know, make some discoveries about things, runs into some, you know, her family and Red Dagger and some other, you know, she has some other goings on there, but it gets into, like, some, like, World War II histories with, like, India and everything. And since so much of the Marvel Universe is, like, New York City, it's just exciting to see, like, different world history in different places and, like, stuff like that in a show. Like, even if they came to Canada, I mean, it's still relatively the same compared to going to, like, a country halfway around the world type of thing.
That was fun about the Moon Knight series too, right? And even like the Shang-Chi movie doing the Mystic Cities and all that stuff.
Yeah, because we've seen all the other stuff, like, hundreds of times, but how many times do you ever get to see, like, other cultures and histories and stuff? You're not as familiar with that, so that's cool to see it incorporated into a show. So seeing that Red Dagger shows up, I had to go back to the Miss Marvel series and read his first appearance. And I thought, oh, I'll probably just read the first appearance, right? I'm like, oh, that's all I'm interested in. He has this sort of red mask type of the things people are wearing before you get a fancy face mask and everything, like an N95 or something. Like he just has that sort of like just sort of mask hanging off his face. So I thought, oh, you know, I'll read this first appearance. Probably this issue is more exciting. This was issue 12 of the second volume. More exciting than I read the first issue. So I'm like, oh, there are some similar elements, you know, she visits. But it's like here she visits by herself. And then in the show, like, she's with her family. Like, granted, this isn't her, like, first visit in the comics. But it's just, I guess her family lets her travel alone, even though they're at the airport. And then when she shows up at the airport, like, there's family there. But there's a moment where she's alone. And it seems like that's not a thing so much in the show. Like, there's always, like, people around her or something. They don't even, like, in the first episode of the show, it's like she wants to go to like a con and they're like, what? And she's like, oh, I'm going to have to sneak out and do all this stuff because they're like super protective. So after this, reading this first appearance, I'm like, oh, well, let me see when else he shows up. So he shows up like as a student in Jersey City. And then they go through this whole thing where this exchange student is for a semester. And then she's like, oh, well, of course, like, there's a lot of people in Pakistan. What are the odds that, you know, that it's going to be someone that I know? And then, of course, it turns out to be the dude that's the Red Dagger that's going to be at her school. and the art is always pretty good. Because the one issue 12 is, I think it's Andolfo, who's does all those Image comic series now. So it's always quality. I mean, that's the one thing I think Ms. Marvel has kept. Because I think it was the artist from Runaways on that first issue of the volume one of Ms. Marvel. Even though it wasn't the same style that from the Runaways book. Like, it's pretty distinctive. I think the colorist helps with that and everything, too.
Well, kids, I thought I'd team up with the team up. And Kevin and I, behind the scenes, were chatting about the team-up issues, and he mentioned 131, which for some reason, the issues around it are on the Unlimited, but that isn't. That has the distinction of being the first White Rabbit issue.
Ah, with the Paul Smith cover?
And yeah, what's... I wanted to get into a little something that I had forgotten about with early 80s comics. The copy I have, it's a black cover. Yeah. Beautiful, like the blacks are unbroken, like one little spine tick. It's got Spider-Man and Frogman's head mounted, White Rabbit in the middle.
Oh.
And it looks so good. And then I open it and I forgot, like, I don't know if it's the one I got, but the printing looks terrible inside. Yeah. So sometimes I'm not good with grading or whatever, but you get these issues and I spend all that time looking at the cover and the side and you forget, like, I don't forget to open up because, so especially things like the letters pages and bullpen bulletins, like it's just so muddy, and you're like, oh. But yeah, this is the JM wrote it, Cary Gamble, Mike Esposito again finishing, Bob Sharon on colors, and we get the debut of the White Rabbit, who is basically a rich aristocrat whose only escape was reading books, and when her husband dies, leaves her rich, she decides to pursue a life of crime. What's kind of funny about it is, like, it involves a lot of her henchmen because she pays so well because she's not in it for the money. And that was the part I think I enjoyed the most about kind of this angle. And as we've talked about, the Frogman character is Eugene, who is sort of a sad sack character who inherited his father's equipment. And we're in an era where Spider-Man now is taking on kind of a mentor role where he finds all these sort of lovable losers at best, and he always scolds them like, this is not for you. You like, he doesn't have any superpowers. He has this super suit of limited use.
Until he accidentally cranks the button and then he goes wild.
Yeah. And so he's always backing his way into the solution by not having control over the suit. And Spider-Man's always bailing him out and telling him he shouldn't do it. So I always thought, though, I haven't revisited most of the Frogman issues, but I thought they rang a lot of pathos, is my memory. And that you would kind of been like, oh, I get Eugene. You know, he's kind of a loser who just wants to make it. And they give him just enough success to sort of have him make it. I don't know. I thought it was a well handled for being a bit of a tropey character. I remember it being well handled. Certainly at the time I'm reading these, I'm not a much younger man. And what is this, 81, 82, something like that?
You see yourself as the Frog really, Man? Even though Spider-Man's the everyman, you're like, oh, Frog Man's my dude.
I never really saw myself as the Frog Man, but I did like that he was like a fat guy, which was not super common in comic books, even in this era. So we have the his ongoing plot is obviously his dad, the reformed criminal, does not want him out going on in Frogman, and neither does Spider-Man, but he's at a diner, the Quickie Burger, which is a chain invented for Marvel Comics. Come on, you dropped the ball. That was perfect. You could get product placement money from Wendy's or Hardee's or something.
But, I mean, they mentioned McDonald's.
So she robbed the place, and it's kind of a running gag. We're also in the fun era where Spider-Man still has a lot of street crime that he wraps up. Like that, if you're a writer and you need to fill a few pages, you just have him foil some robbery or whatever.
Sure.
Make a few quips, and it sort of grounds what level. This is not the Spider-Man that's, you know, Captain Universe and all that stuff. That being said, he's clearly more skilled than Eugene, who's the complete joke. So Eugene tries to foil the robbery. It doesn't go well. Spider-Man has to save him. You know, surprise. Eugene and his dad have some backstory where he gets caught, you know, and his dad's like, hey, you can't use this stuff. I you know, it's no good. You could die. Something could happen to you. But they're under financial pressure. So his dad goes to become a henchman of White Rabbit. And that's where you get whole backstory. I actually also have, funny enough, the White Rabbit Marvel Legend figure.
Oh, yeah.
I always like the White Rabbit. Like, yeah, it's a fun character.
It is fun, and surprise, you would like a rabbit character.
I was gonna say.
But the whole point of the White Rabbit wasn't the White Rabbit. I don't think she was meant to stick around, because the idea of the character wasn't about the character at all. It was about the fact of the henchman, right? Like you said, the whole angle of the henchman paying well was the whole point of her character, so that Eugene's dad would want to try to get a job.
Yeah, so you know, following in with Kevin's whole Sandman getting a job.
Yeah, and that's the fun thing about the Frogman is that he was a legacy character. He was trying to make up for his dad's bad name, you know, as the Leapfrog, and I thought that was fun.
And I did. One issue of Daredevil.
And I also like that, don't do it too much. Like, I don't want a Frogman series, or you know what I mean? Like, keep it like this, where occasionally you sprinkle him in. He's an appetizer, not a main course.
Well, so I think that's what they kept on using him as, because I remember getting that Amazing Spider-Man back issue, and then all through the 90s it seemed like he would pop up here and there, and I'm like, oh, it's the Legion of Losers or whatever, or like the most offbeat issue of the month.
Didn't he end up wearing a flak jacket with the Avengers and working for Captain America for a while, too, like as one of their tech guys, like down the line? Like, I think that's when he made good.
With, like, Jameson?
Yeah, like with him and, yeah, exactly. In that same group of... Yeah. Pretty sure.
So, you can guess that Frogman and Spider-Man crash the White Rabbit, who's using Eugene's dad as a henchman. that creates all kinds of conflict between them. The White Rabbit has, and I enjoyed this too, purchased some very expensive jet boots that are somewhat defective, which is really, like, makes a lot of sense. Like, they always have all this tech that works well. I like when they mix in funny little things, like how the tech doesn't work completely perfectly. Because she's also not a perfect... like, her whole thing is being the dilettante. So, in the process of this, the White Rabbit crashes into Eugene, which crashed right into the Spider-Man B-plot, which is he has a friend who is having money trouble, and when they crash in, the friend is able to knock out the White Rabbit and split the money with Eugene, who saves his problem. And it turns out that Eugene's dad was not working for her straight. He was undercover wearing a wire.
So, you mean he was a hero all along?
That's he was all, a hero all along.
That's all Eugene ever wanted.
Exactly. And he could also get a job as a model because dad is super buff. So it's a nice, like, kind of bottle thing where Eugene and his dad have a nice moment. Peter's friend is able to, you know, square up, pay for his mother's operation. In a sense, having all the kind of weird Spider-Man analogs, his friend is him paying for Aunt May's medicine or whatever the analog, and then Eugene's him as the young hero. But yeah, it was one of those fun, we're going to keep it separate. But I will say, I hope they load this on the Unlimited, because everyone knows I'm a huge fan of print, but I have books that are from the 60s that look so much cleaner than this.
Is that why with the old books, like the CGC, you'll see like 9.4 and then you'll see 9.4 white pages? Yes. It's like, I don't see that designation with like modern books. Like maybe there's indie publisher that uses newsprint and they have to make that designation, but it seems like one from the 80s, it's like, or the 70s, it's like, oh, we got to make sure that this says white pages, so you know, it's like if you open it up, it's not going to be that story.
It was funny that, like, I have so many older comics. I guess Marvel, you know, they use different printers and different.
Yeah, things.
My copy's printed pretty good. I mean, I can see the back page through the splash page a little bit, but otherwise, it's pretty clean.
Yeah, it was just, and then the subsequent ones I read too, just like the bullpen bulletins pages were really muddy and the letter pages were a little kind of like there was some separation. So
I got
my eyes aren't what they used to be. So I'm like, okay, I think I can read this Ralph Macchio editor notes or whatever.
Yeah. Look at the size of that nose.
So I found, I guess I didn't know about this, like, DeMatteis goes on to Spectacular Spider-Man, but this is like years before, and it's like, oh, he's writing, he got his, like, all these Spider-Man stories in like Marvel team-up, and I'm like, that's cool.
Yes.
Like, I would have had no way of like really knowing, because that's not something like I ran into back then.
Yep. Bat and Defenders and Captain America were his titles.
Like, I'm more familiar with those two than, it's like, I don't know. I guess because I was into web then. I would be getting web, but Marvel team-up had already passed on. So. Yeah.
I'm funny enough, White Rabbit shows up in the new ASM. I picked up issue 3, but I'm kind of not buying it on the reg. I just got an issue to try the return of JR, but
yeah.
Issue 3 didn't really wow me, so I think I'm going to just get this at some other time or read it on the Unlimited or whatever. I think, Steve, you might have talked about it. It's Tombstone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he just spends the whole issue like Spider-Man's chained up and he's beating him. And I'm like, Tombstone? Tombstone is the new Kraven, I guess?
It's a whole thing. And then Spider-Man breaks free in the next issue and he fights his way out. But somehow they pulled a switcheroo on him and like where he fought his way out through was really Tombstone's enemy. So like he fought Tombstone's war for him. And it was like, it was almost clever, but it wasn't actually executed well. And there was I don't know if it's the writer or the editor, but it just missed the mark.
It's like, that's a clever scam in a way. So because you think, oh yeah, this is going to be more generic than it is. But
do you feel like it could have been better though, Kevin? And part of it is this whole missing time period, right, where he did something wrong and everyone doesn't like him now, and it's like, well, don't you think you should say, I don't know why
I liked previous stories more than this story, and I can't really, I mean, maybe it's just me, like, when you can't tell that something's bad and you're just not digging something, like, maybe the story is, like, I definitely know that people are really digging this stuff, and I'm like, maybe it's just not for me, like, it's not exactly my thing. It's just weird. And also, there's that whole thing about Peter, I guess he wasn't being nice to people or whatever happened. Yeah, I don't know what happened there. And that's still hanging over the book.
Yeah, it was just to grab one issue. And it's just, like I said, Tombstone just beating the stuffing out of Spider-Man was like just a random, weird... Like
torture porn.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's not like a spite. Like, that's more like Punisher. There's other characters where I feel that's a trope that's more, because then that's going to change the relationship of Tombstone to Spider-Man, and they have kind of a funny, goofy, you know, he's Robbie's villain, really. Like, sure. I liked all those stories more than this is. And also, I like JRJR coming back, but that is not the Tombstone.
Yeah.
And you know what? Sal ruined me or whatever.
They played they had a funny note with the Tombstone and Robbie relationship that was actually, the timing of it wasn't executed that good, but it was a clever idea, at least, where he sort of thought he was in danger, but he wasn't.
But, well, the other thing I love is, for some reason, they love making JRJR draw children, and for me, I remember the Cap comic, and it just never works. So we have the flashback with all the giant-headed kids and everything. And
kids are hard to draw.
And I'm like, maybe lean to his strengths. Like, he does a lot of things great, and that's just one thing that they always, Marvel's like, oh, we got to have him draw children. People love it. Like, so that part, they all have the big peanuts heads. But still, I'm glad people, like I said, I'll probably read on the limit or something. It just wasn't the Spider-Man I was vibing on for now.
Yeah, I much more enjoyed when the White Rabbit or the Beetle would show up in Spencer's Spider-Man, and then they had that whole business going on in the background with, and then they're like, oh, we give benefits and everything, and we rob these places. Yeah. And,
hey, yeah, I bought the page original art for the big Tombstone page, and you know, you find out he's the parent to the Beetle.
How about that? It's come to that, Kevin. We're looking back fondly on Nick Spencer's run.
I know, isn't that funny? Like, I didn't think I would say that.
Nice.
Boy.
We hijacked your Marvel team up. All right, tell us about Marvel team up.
Okay. Well, I have issue 121, and that's also written, or script. Maybe I should go with their things in here, right? Script, J.M. DeMatteis, and pencils by Cary Gamble, and inks, Mike Esposito again.
Can I just say, and I know we said it when we, back when we covered Power Man and Iron Fist, but how clear and competent of a storyteller is Cary Gamble? I love his stuff. I love his faces. Like, the more of a close-up you get, the more detail you get, and the fight scenes are always nice and clear. He's just such a solid, good storyteller, and who I think never really gets enough due.
Yeah, like, if I'm looking through a comic like this, I'm like, oh, that's like standard Marvel clear storytelling and everything. Like, this is like a level of quality you want to see.
So does Spidey team up with in this issue, 121?
They sort of tease on the cover, like, the Speed Demon's going to be here. Not his first appearance, but pretty close. And then they're like, but who's this mystery hero?
Dun.
And the shadow of the character is even green. Like, how about that?
She-Hulk.
Exactly. Right? It's definitely going to be She-Hulk. the whole gag in this issue is, like, the Human Torch and Spider-Man, you know, they have their funny friendship where they're all goofing around and everything. and the criminals are kind of taking advantage of them. So they're like, oh yeah, we can run away and everything. And the Human Torch is like, hold on a second here, guys. Like, I know we're not paying attention to you and doing a whole stick here, but you know, we're still gonna catch the bad guys.
Yeah, you guys.
But then you have Speed Demon. Speedy.
They're only street punks. You know what I mean?
This is true.
This is way below Johnny Storm's pay grade.
I mean, Speed Demon has a little more success, but he's Speed Demon.
Who the heck is Speed Demon? Spidey knows, though, because he faced him. He's the first one to face him, right?
Yeah, I need to read that. But I don't think I wanted to break the... Like, I think I read up to 183, and then what was that? Like,
222.
Okay. So I didn't want to jump that far ahead. Like, even though I'm like, I could get to it at any time, I'm just like, I don't know. I bailed out for whatever reason, and then I need to get back into it.
But we know that the Speed Demon is the Whizzer from the Squadron Supreme.
Yes. Yes. And he's not using any of those Thunderbolts tricks here.
But he's only recently been the Speed Demon. He's only been the Speed Demon in that Amazing Spider-Man issue, and now this, which is shortly after that. So they're kind of trying to establish him as Speed Demon, which is how he's stayed ever since, what, now 30 years later?
Yeah. So I like how, like with the Frogman, like, coming back and everything, like, they keep on pulling on other characters. Like, oh... I mean, it's a good place for it, Marvel team of it. Like, you need a villain, you need a hero. You can keep on pulling on these things and giving them some more appearances, building them up. Sandman, even, like, all that. You progress their story, even if it's like some done in ones or whatever. It always seems like there's some form of motion. I think that's pretty important in like a character's history. Like, agreed. Even if it's just an illusion, it's like something's happening, right? It's important to this guy's life. So, yeah, Sandman's going about his business here. He's doing some robberies. He's doing well for himself. And then we get into the whole Frogman's. Andrew kind of covered some of this stuff with the, you know, they go into the whole deep frog angle and all that and get those character moments. Those slapping moments. And then Eugene here finds that old Frogman box.
Yeah.
Because you don't throw that stuff like that away, right? You're like, who knows in the future?
And it really,
so you have that box in the closet.
It comes from seeing his dad totally hit rock bottom, right? I mean, that's what the catalyst was.
So, of course, he's going to make his father proud, redeem that identity. And he's not that great. It's not... I mean, I think it mentions that he's... isn't exactly his first time, like, out in the costume. But still, it's like... It's not. He didn't put the hours and hours training into the costume. And
Kevin, he could have killed somebody.
Could have.
He jumps, like, off the roof of a police car, but it's not off the roof. His legs go right through, and if the police officers weren't both getting out of their sides of the car, someone could have died right there alone, let alone bouncing around through crowded streets. But he manages. I
mean, if there was some modern series comic, that totally would have happened. But yeah, the Speed Demon runs across Spider-Man and Human Torch here, and they do their thing.
The human
intersects with the fabulous Frogman here.
Isn't the Torch a great chase character? Right? Cause,
of course he's flying.
Because he's flying and he's burning, right? So you can turn on a dime and make him, you know, go into crash into things and all that kind of stuff. You can make him get wet.
You're probably not going to lose sight of him either.
Yeah. I can feel you're getting warm, right?
Yeah. Of course, Johnny has that whole thing of, you know, falling and then unflaming, luckily. Like, Spider-Man doesn't want to get super burned up. I like how Speed Man, this is Mega Man villain. He karate chops the ground and then takes all these chunks of pavement to throw at Johnny.
Now, think of that in the script, right? That Speed Demon cuts into the ground and starts throwing up chunks of the asphalt at the heroes. And didn't Gamill do it in a way where you totally, like, it conveys it perfectly. You get the idea. Even the idea of it being karate chops. All right, he's super fast karate chopping to chop it into pieces. And then in the next panel, you get the idea that he's just whipping the pieces up there so fast, flinging them at the torch. It really is so well directed.
And I'm thinking he has more than speed. Like, to be able, like, you don't want to. It's sort of like when you start to get into the thing about, well, if they're speedsters, do they eat more?
Right.
So there was a moment where I'm just like, he's not just fast. Like, he can do something with this. And then just to chuck those pieces around, like, he's a peak specimen speedster.
I love when Spidey lifts a storm door up off the sidewalk and right as the Speed Demon's running towards them and, like, turns it into a ramp. So Speed Demon goes just flying up and through a through a building.
That's pretty great. But, you know, we have to have Frogman show up and save the day?
Of course. It would take a random element. The two well-trained heroes working in concert, doing all of their known tricks, isn't working against someone as fast as the Speed Demon, but someone who doesn't know what the heck they're doing and just is like a chaotic element in the mix, bouncing all over the place.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. Total chaos. And then he just happens to, like, fall right on the Speed Demon's back. And then, of course, that gives the Frogman a bit of confidence there and, like, hey, I can do this, maybe. Like, something worked out. I totally intended to do that. Wasn't an accident at all.
When I first read this as a almost 13-year-old kid back in the day, I cracked up thinking that the sound of Frogman landing on Speed Demon was like the Gwen Stacy neck break, and that I wasn't certain that the Speed Demon had survived that encounter, because in the next panel he's like propping himself up by palming his head against the pavement. The Frogman is, he's like sitting on him, and Speed Demon is just crunched into the corner of the panel, and he's like palming his head against the pavement, like holding himself up, and you don't see the Speed Demon again for the rest of the issue, or for like quite some time in comics. And I'm like, did he die?
Well, I think that works out with the karate chop thing. I think he's okay. He has some endurance.
Yeah, we know that now.
Yeah.
But back then, the question was unanswered. There was no internet for me to complain to, Gavin.
Or was that one of your discussion things? Like, I just remember certain things coming up, like that Daredevil 300, like, discussing with some a few friends, going, oh my god, did you see that thing? Type of, and then you're convinced of one thing, and then maybe years later you discover on the internet, I'm like, no one else, like, had the same reaction or whatever. Yeah, so that was fun. Learning about Frogman's early adventures.
Yay, Frogman.
So maybe we'll find some other kooky characters. I don't know, I just feel like I had a buildup of Marvel team-ups I need to get through, and I'm like, yes, I'm going to do this. I've had these issues for a while. Clear out some fun Bronze Age-ish.
Lay them on me, dude, because I was pretty much read off the stands from, like, issue 20-something all the way up.
Well, I think this is a good era, too. Like, I know some of those books get wonky in certain times, or you see the letters page and everyone's just like, oh my god, I'm going to quit this book soon if you don't approve it, and, like, then, like, 10 issues later, like, they get the different creative team on, and then it's humming along again.
All right, that's another episode of Marvel Noise, right? Right. Thank you guys for being on, as always. Next episode, we'll come up with something else. We got to. It's the road to episode 400 and our 15th anniversary.
Ooh. The road continues ever on.
It's dangerous. Full of options and winding pathways. You have to choose wisely. Bikes.
Sidecars.
The death race.
Exactly.
Death race 400.
400. Hopefully not.
All right. Until Frogman joins Darth Vader in the Savage Avengers, make mine Marvel. Later. Living on the edge, fighting crime, spinning webs, swinging from the highest ledge.